P-minus 96. Ford McCarthy Residence, Birchwood, Colorado. Prior to the chaos that had followed so soon after its completion, many had commented that the previous day's optimistic march evoked memories of those which swept the globe at the height of the Now movement. In those days, the politically astute William Godfrey, then toiling as Britain's unpopular prime minister, had supported Dan McCarthy's call for U.S. President Valerie Slater to disclose her supposed knowledge of extraterrestrial intelligence, and citizens had taken to the streets in their peaceful millions. The crowd scenes playing out today, on the other hand, were far less positive, and instead brought to mind the looting and rioting that had occurred on a few regrettable occasions when potentially catastrophic news had leaked out. The worst disorder of the past few years had come when Godfrey's successor as prime minister, the derisible John Cole, took it upon himself to leak news that an extinction-level comet was on a collision course with Earth. Godfrey had at least been publicly visible on that occasion and endeavored to do all he could to calm things down, and had indeed done a manful job with the support of everyone in Birchwood. Now, though, when Godfrey was in Birchwood, having been abducted so unceremoniously, care was needed in striking a balance between the desire for a swift and hopefully calming return to the public eye and waiting to see what Dan and Tara would encounter on the other side of the gate. No one outside of their inner circle, which had come to include Godfrey in a development none of them had seen coming, knew anything whatsoever about the gate that had been discovered on New Kerguelen or the problems it had caused on that planet. Sacco abruptly took Godfrey from Buenos Aires so he could be looped in on what was happening, and while the alien was cognizant of the fears this sudden abduction might cause, he had considered it wiser in the long run to stop Godfrey from opening the ICA with a speech containing proclamations that he might have had to walk back almost immediately. With the ICA's entire purpose being the facilitation of cooperation between Earth and New Kerguelen, Sacco knew that dealing with the gate-driven chaos was absolutely crucial. If that situation had been allowed to spiral out of control to the extent that the gateways were destroyed, there could never again have been any link between the two planets, and whoever had been on either when that moment came would have found themselves stranded there for good. Earthly disorder could be dealt with and recovered from, Sacco had wisely, if reluctantly, considered, whereas an elimination of their only link between worlds could not. As it turned out, the humans, and even Leisha, didn't entirely share Sacco's view that abducting Godfrey in the manner he had was the optimal course of action. What was done, however, and everyone was trying to make the best of it. Sacco was stationed now on New Kerguelen, waiting, like everyone else, for his partner Leisha and human crew of three to return from the other side of the gate. This left only five humans in Emma's kitchen, with the fourth and final adult being an individual who had joined their group very recently. A lawyer, well known to Clark and having already proven his loyalty and worth, by the name of Chip Petrovich. It was thanks to Chip that Clark and Emma had found the scoundrel responsible for murdering their close friend Phil Norris, and thanks to their quick thinking that Leisha had been able to deep dive into the mind of that killer and obtain the name of a Mr. Big, much higher up the chain of command. Phil's death was as unknown to the public as Godfrey's current whereabouts, or indeed Dan and Tara's, being just one more recent development that had thrown the group's lives deeper into chaos and which could have far-reaching consequences. Still, only a matter of hours after his untimely death, Phil's body had been placed by Clark, as respectfully as possible, inside a large walk-in freezer the man had installed in his basement to preserve game. Of the four adults present, all silently awaiting a sign from Piper that her father was safely back on the right side of New Kerguelen's gate, only Clark and Chip had seen the very latest piece of news, that James West, the individual Leisha managed to identify as culpable for ordering the botched midnight raid on Phil's home, had just been killed. With no other names to go on, this took away the only avenue the group had previously been counting on to see just how high the order had come from. Some of them suspected the involvement of Blitz Media, Jan Geller in particular, While others feared it might run even deeper with the likes of John Cole or even President Slater having been involved. This theory rested on the possibility that the raid had been an attempt to uncover some piece of the ever-deepening alien puzzle previously protected by a Birchwood inner circle that many in positions of traditional political power wanted to see ripped apart and cast aside. Wisely, given how concerned Emma was about the well-being of her husband and sister, Clark and Chip kept James West's death to themselves for now. West had been a powerful enough crime lord for the news networks to be covering the story even at a time when Godfrey and Dan, generally considered the two most powerful men in the world, given the influence they held over the messengers, were mysteriously and unusually absent from public view, having vanished from the ICA headquarters in Buenos Aires. West's death wasn't quite headline news, given how much else was going on, but Clark and Chip both knew that Emma and Godfrey would see it soon enough. Clark's father, Henry, and his old buddy, Mr. Bird, both of whom were struggling greatly in the aftermath of their mutual friend's murder, were currently in New Care Grillin' Bar and Grill at the edge of town, having opened Phil's bar in his honor, and in a bid to give Birchwood's citizens some degree of normality on a day for which normal was as appropriate an adjective as black was for snow. The bar was filled with TVs, so Clark and Chip knew the old boys would be shaking their heads in frustration that James West had died and likely taken with him their only chance of delivering justice to everyone responsible for Phil's death. Naturally, though, both hoped with every fiber of their beings that good news would come from New Kerguelen before then, either in the form of a comment from Little Piper or perhaps the sudden reappearance of Dan and Tara alongside Leisha and Billy Kendrick, who rounded out their intrepid crew. Chip, having served as Phil's trusted lawyer in recent months, had a few hours ago given the group a key card, which would grant access to a locked section of the dead man's basement. While this was one more thing that seemed decidedly non-urgent compared to everything else that was going on, at home on Earth and on at least one other world, those who had known Phil as a serious and well-funded prepper had known him well enough to be aware that there were likely to be things in his bunker-style stash that they couldn't even imagine. Whether anything in Phil's stash could prove directly useful in their current plight, and just what those items might be, were matters of speculation. But Clark in particular was keen to take a look just as soon as his brother Dan and girlfriend Tara were safely at his side. The only other individuals who knew anything about what was really going on were Italian billionaire Timo Fiori and his trusted right-hand man, Alessandro Bonucci. Both were currently in Colorado Springs at the Fiori Frontieri headquarters, a space research building from which they had identified an alien transcript, which ultimately led Leisha and Dan to believe that their unfortunately necessary trip across the gateway would lead to a sanctuary planet capable of sustaining life. The Italians knew nothing about Phil. Emma's hope was that Dan and Tara had indeed emerged from the gate to find an untouched planet capable of sustaining life, and that their promise to return immediately to confirm their safety was perhaps running a few minutes late due to an understandable urge to rapidly gather some flyover data. The alternatives, chiefly that they had emerged to find a hostile force or perhaps even a destructive natural phenomena or some kind of vortex that could make a return impossible, didn't bear thinking about. The more seconds that ticked by, however, the harder it became to think about anything else. "How much longer are we going to give this?" Clark asked a short while later, quite simply no longer able to keep quiet. Even with the count still in minutes, it felt like far too long since Piper seemingly reported on the group's crossing of the gate, and no further update had come.
"Until we do what?" Emma replied. "Clark, what can we even do?"
Once again, there was no rush to reply. "Piper," Chip Petrovich eventually said, lowering himself to her eye level and smiling gently. "Do you know where your daddy is? Is he still with Leisha and Aunt Tara?"
"No,"
the baby said extremely clearly and bluntly.
"Dada go. Lise go. Tata go."
"But they all went together,
William Godfrey chimed in, also addressing the young baby in a manner that would have looked patently ridiculous to anyone who didn't know how special she was. Piper looked into her mother's eyes.
Dada, no he,
she said very deliberately, but still without being able to complete the word here. Brief telepathic engagements with Piper, conducted using some of the remarkable neck-based patches the messengers had recently found in a previously unknown outpost on New Kerguelen, made it clear that the child's mind was already capable of forming coherent thoughts that her lips and tongue weren't yet able to form into vocalizations. Emma had internally vowed to never again utilize a patch to communicate with Piper, fearing it might stunt the baby's speech development by making it seem unnecessary to learn how to communicate out loud, but every passing minute made her less sure how much longer she could hold out. The urge to know what was going on with Dan was more than an urge, it was a need. I don't know what we can do in the face of this wait, either, Chairman Godfrey stated in his refined English accent. But Emma, at some point I'm going to need to do something about the issues facing this planet. If I'm invisible for the rest of the day, there's no telling what Cole might try to pull. If this was only about politics, I wouldn't care, but streets are burning at the hands of fear-driven rioters already. My abduction is behind that, and my return to the public arena is perhaps the only thing that can abate it. Emma sighed, then slowly nodded.
Let's give them just a little bit longer, though. When they come back with good news, that makes your reappearance speech a lot easier to put together. It's going to be a lot easier to manage this message when we know what the message is, and until then, I really don't think an hour or two is going to be the difference between life and death.
Agreed, Godfrey said, grinning slightly in admiration. Even now, his former sparring partner was somehow able to keep a clear enough head to be thinking about message management while her husband and sister were incommunicado on the wrong side of a physics-defying gateway to God only knew where. The air in Birchwood, Colorado was thicker than ever with anticipation and impatience, and everyone knew that the stakes had never been higher. The past few days had brought turbulence of a kind no one had ever imagined, much less experienced, and the four adults huddled around a child like no other all shared an uncomfortable feeling that things might get a whole lot worse before they got any better.